One night, dog hard knocking on the door. The German officer, he wants someplace to sleep. So put me back upstairs. They put the German officer across the hall from me. And everything was fine. The Germany got up the next morning, stole the gentleman's camera and left. So we came out pretty clean. But I kept moving on further south and finally met the Canadian spearhead of the British 8th Army at a place called Caudebec, which is right on the Seine River. They took me back to on the other side to the headquarters of the 8th English 8th Army, and I briefed them on what the material, the weaponry, the tanks and so forth, personnel were on the side of the river where I was. So I briefed them on that. And then after a couple of days, I met a 51 P-51 pilot, Bob Littlefield, from Carmel, California. And we became friends, and we found out that while I wasn't in the air very long, the parachute, we were in the air about the same time. So I met him, and here came a C-47 with a bunch of fighter wing tanks. And the guy said, if you help me unload this stuff, I'll take you back to England. Said, okay. So we helped him, and we're on our way back to England, and we're flying low because they still had Goring's Yellow Noses, ME-109s, called the Abbeville Kids. They were still there in Abbeville, and I didn't want to get knocked down by one of them in a C-47. But it just so happened, and the people that I talked to my little morning sights, I tell them this story. Old Bob, he went to lay down along the side. They had strips of aluminum there and had this little dips in them for your fanny where they carried paratroopers. And he was laying there. And, of course, here comes Smart Lieutenant again. So I go up to him and real close. I said, break left. He broke left and rolled out on the floor. And he wasn't too thrilled with that. So I, at that time, was a good excuse for me to use the restroom facilities. And, of course, now, understand we're down low in a C-47. And you know what that tail is giving at this, you know. So I go back there, and the facilities was a 5-gallon can of used engine oil. So understand that and visualize that. And I had sat on that, and you can understand what's going on. And after I finished, I looked around, and there's no toilet tissue. So now we have another emergency. Because, you know, my first theory ain't looking good at all with all that oil. So I took off my socks and wiped and cleaned myself up on my socks. So that's the way I took care of that little problem. But I moved on, got back to England, to London. Major White interviewed me and sent me on back to my group, got back there. And as you know, when we get people got shot down, you don't know what happened. They're dead. They're missing in action. They're POWs. You don't know. So whatever clothing they had belongs to you. You give, go get what you want. And when I got back, I got out of there in 2.5 weeks because I had a wife that was pregnant. I had to move. But I got out of there in 2.5 weeks. And so I went back to a unit supply and said, have you sent all of my, the rest of my gear back to the U.S. yet? Oh, no, sir. He says, we haven't sent anything back. It's all right here. I said, oh, really? Oh, yeah. I said, why is that? And apparently, I wasn't the kindly old gentleman then that I am today. Because they said, weekly, when we saw weekly go down, of course, they saw 8 shoots, and they figured it was me that did the fast drop. We saw where weekly went down. If anybody's going to get out, he's going to get out. And when he comes back, I don't want to be wearing his clothes. So that took care of that. I had got out my clothes, and they put me on a train that night. It was real scary. Took me to Prestwick, Scotland. I got to Prestwick and laying in a bunk in a big, long barracks. And the charge of quarters came by with a flashlight, looking at names on the beds. And I said, "Who are you looking for?" They said, "Looking for a weekly." I said, "Okay, you found it. What do you need?" He said, "There's a C-54 sitting on the ramp waiting for you to take you back to Washington." I said, "Okay," so down I go. We go back to Washington, and a lieutenant colonel picked me up in his private car at Washington National, take me right to the Pentagon. And then I debriefed the staff at the Pentagon on what I'd seen, because, you know, understand, radios were very bad. Didn't have telephones that were worth anything at that time. So I'd been in occupied territory 3 days ago. So I was pretty hot information. So I got back and got that information to them. And then they put me on a train and I headed back to home. Now, my home is Steubenville, Ohio, and my wife was there staying with her mother. She was pregnant. My wife was pregnant, not her mother. But she was pregnant. And when I was shot down, she received a telegram with three stars on it. Three stars showed you're missing in action. Four stars, you're dead. And she saw the three stars. She says, "Oh, Mom, it's okay. He's only missing in action. He'll be all right." She didn't really understand the whole problem, but he'll be all right. And so she had a lot of faith, and I'm glad. So I got off the train at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I went over to a payphone, and she hadn't heard a word from me. I tried to call for radio on shortwave radio twice out of France, but no one had gotten a word. And I went over to the phone, and I told her, I said, "Open the door, honey, I'm coming home." And I grabbed a taxi cab, and up the hill I was home. But she was a great lady. I want to tell you a little bit about her for just a moment. When I graduated from flight school in Arkansas, we went home, and my friend and his girlfriend, they were married. And I asked my girlfriend, my fiance, she'd like to go to Florida, because we were going to Sebring, Florida. And this is a story that not everyone will appreciate, but some of the older ladies will, I know. So we drove all the way down to Sebring and got there, and the hotel, a fine hotel, had two rooms left. And one room, of course, went to the other couple, and we received the following room. And we got there, and of course, we're only engaged. And this is 1943. It's a different era. I understand that. I know you do too. But we got there, and I said, "Okay, you sleep in bed, and I'll sleep in a chair." She said, no, I'll sleep in bed. You sleep in bed." So she slept under the covers, and I slept on top. And as of August the 4th, next week, that would be 67 years that we've been married. No idea. She said, "The judge isn't doing anything." I said, "Run him out." She brought the judge out. He married us, and we went to breakfast. And she went looking for a house, and I went to the airport, started flying B-17s. That's how the whole thing got started. But I wanted to tell you, excuse me a moment, I get so dry because I talk so much. In 1998, the French people built a monument to my air crew. We couldn't go because I was flying EA B-17 at the time. I was committed, and I always meet my commitments. So in 1999, we went over to thank them for what they had done. And there's a beautiful monument there. Matter of fact, I was there last year because I flew over there in a C-130. It was the 65th anniversary of D-Day, because I had to go to the American Cemetery. I've got a lot of friends in there, and let them know this was the chance, last chance I was going to be there to say goodbye. But excuse me just a moment. But there, the day I got shot down, there was a little 7-year-old boy, And he was out in his father's field watching the airplanes go back to England. And he saw one up there circling around. And that airplane was my airplane. He saw it blow up. And later he became the mayor of that little town of Lamberville. And he got this whole monument thing together. And so we went over there and to thank him, like I said. And they took wonderful care of it. And what I want to tell you about was the evening we went out to the monument. They had a big affair, like the governor of our state, the head man of the St. Inferior, which is their big political area. He was there, presented me with a book so heavy I had trouble carrying it through the airport. But we went out there to the monument, and I was very fortunate because while the mayor spoke no English and I spoke no French, it just so happened that I had a fellow with me that was the deputy mayor of Brompto. Now remember, this is the first town I lived in. He was a deputy mayor there, and he had been an exchange student in the United States and had beautiful English. So I'd have to say something to him, and he'd tell the mayor tell him. It took a long time for conversation, but one day we were having lunch, and the mayor asked me, he said, "Are you going to be at the banquet?" And I said, "What is the occasion?" "Ha ha ha!" He said, "You're the occasion, so I'll be there." So my wife and I, we went down to the monument before we went to the banquet. And now in that particular area of Normandy, I don't know about any other time, but while we were there, it was a low overcast the whole time. And we were there about 8 days. But when we went to that monument and the mayor started to speak, of course my interpreter's right here, he spoke eloquently and he was telling me what he said. And then they had a little guy come in there, he was 91 at the time, and he was known as the Leopard. And he had saved 14 airmen, Allied airmen, four of them of mine. And boy, he was about this big. And boy, when he spoke, he's small, but he had a voice like you wouldn't believe. I mean, everybody paid attention. But I had my other fellow, Laurent Vitant, there. He had a camera, and over across the street was a wall for buildings over there. And I had a lot of people standing there. And would you believe that when the mayor started to speak, a hole opened up and the sun came through. And the reason I wanted him to take that picture was to prove that it was sun came through, because you see there's shadows on the wall. He took the pictures. And then after the leopard, he finished speaking and we were ready to go back to the banquet. That hole closed up, never saw it again. Do I hear an amen? That's all. I don't know. That's it. That's the truth. I haven't lied to you before, Adam. But that's the way that thing went. There's so many things I want to tell you now. I won't have so much time. And we're going to, and incidentally, I don't have nothing. We're going to open this up for some questions, too, because they felt that in many cases, we don't have the opportunity to ask questions, but I ain't going to sweat the time. This is my last time. I've been here 31 years, and my dear friend Charlie says, if you want to come back, we'll come back. If I can make it, I'll do it. But based on everything I know now, this will be my last time here. And I've enjoyed being with you folks so much. I don't know what to say. But I did want to tell you about, at that banquet, there was two ladies there. And it just so happened that their father was the one that brought me the bicycles. And they said he passed away last year. And you and he corresponded, which we did. I had about 7 letters. She said, "Do you still have the letters?" I said, "Sure." She said, "Well, can you send me some copies of that?" I said, "Sure." So what I did when I came back home, I sent her about 3 or 4 of the original letters that her dad had written. So this was in June, and I went to Oshkosh, and That's 99, and I went back home. When I got back home, there's a package there and an envelope there. And I didn't tell you intentionally, but when he and I left Ramto with the bicycles, all I kept was my hack watch, my dog tags, because if you can't identify yourself as an American, or an allied, you're going to get shot as a spy. And I had a bracelet on that had my name on it, a silver bracelet with my name on it, Air Force emblem on it, and my military number on it, 807-802. And I gave that to him for being so kind and helpful and taking me down to the next family. That I gave that to him. And that letter, and if I may, she sent me a letter back. And what it says is, now this is a French lady writing in English, and she does a pretty doggone good job. I'm going to read it exactly like she said. There is, dear Mr. and Mrs. Weekly, there is no word to explain my emotion when receiving my father's letters, as well as no word strong enough to say thank you to you. I hope they will stay in my family for a long time, because we must always think of that period. After talking with my family, I found out that my brother Patrice, born in 1947, had something you gave my father, and we are very happy to give it back, and we hope that you will be happy as much as when I received my father's letter. They sent me back my bracelet. Now, the old man had worn this for a long time because the hasp was worn out. The first link was worn out. I took and had a new hasp put on it, new link put on it. I put it back on 55 years to the day I'd given it to him on August the 15th. So that's where it's been right there. But right after that, I received another letter, and it says, dear sir, we have learned from the local newspaper your visit and commemoration made in your honor by the villages of Lambertville and Brompton. My father and my uncle, Monsieur Dubac, Mayor of Brompton, both passed away now, but have been very happy to see you again. My mother and sister of my mother, who is a sister of Monsieur Dubac, now 97, is still a witness to this part of your life, as well as my brother and myself. In fact, your parachute has been taken off by my father and two boys and hidden by my parents in a hay barn. The tissue has been used later to make blouses and shirts, and the strings braided used to make a cradle, which received in 1955 my father's first grandson. I'm very glad to enclose here with some pieces which are still left as precious memories of those emotional days. He sent me back part of my parachute and part of the shroud lines. And that's pretty cool, too. I didn't bring those. Sometimes I didn't bring those. But they're in a safe place, I assure you. I want to tell you about a mission I flew with the B-17 here. And then I've got to get off because they're going to kill me. But what a way to go. But I was flying out of here. Went to Sheboygan, Michigan. The airport wasn't big enough, so we landed at Pelson. We had one flight the whole time we were there, and I am sure that's the only B-17 that has ever been there. Now we took a flight up around Mackinac Island, and I was flying, 600-700 feet, just cruising. And we came back over to the fort there, and a fellow standing by my shoulder said, hey, Colonel, he says, how about flying over the fort? I want to take some pictures. I said, okay. So just a nice leisure flight over the fort. I went back and landed at Pelson. That afternoon, a lady came up, and she said, I'm the secretary of the manager of the airport, fort at the north right there, at Mackinac, yeah. Slipped me for a minute. But he wanted me to come out and tell you that his father was in the 8th Air Force, and his father had passed away, and they were burying him at the cemetery at the fort, and as they were lowering him into the grave, you flew right over the grave, like that. Now that makes the hair stand up the back of my head every time I tell it. But now that, to me, that's a story that, you know, I just had to tell you. I heard later he was a colonel, he was a pilot. I don't know that to be a fact. All I know, what I told you, I know that to be a fact. But what I want to tell you now is there someone out in the audience that's supposed to take questions? They fell asleep. Well, so much for that. Things seldom go perfect. But what I wanted to say was I so much have enjoyed working in aviation. I've been in 58 years, 24,000 hours. Figures out to be 3.5 years in the air. But I've flown everything, 89 different kind of airplanes. Flown everything from a two-cylinder Ironica C-3 to a Boeing 707s around the world. But I didn't enjoy anything anymore than flying the AB-17. But because I got to go out and see so many people and meet so many. I've met some of my squadron mates. And I've had guys get on the airplane in Rialto, California. And Jack B, he came up and he said, here's a bottle of water. Here's Jack. And he said, I bought the whole airplane. Let's go fly. And that kind of thing. And it's been wonderful. And I love to fly. I love the equipment. But I've always contended it's the people that you enjoy the most. And I want you to know what I think, and that is, I think that the aviation community is probably the finest community in the whole world, and I'm proud that you allowed me to be a part of it. Thank you very much. Thank you.